I'm Jason Lopez for PodTech.net. The conference Java One begins in the next few days, and on the final day of the gathering on Friday, Sun's chairman Scott McNeely and James Gosling, who oversees technology development for the company, will take to the stage. Gosling is a longtime key person at Sun. He was one of the authors of Java. In this interview with him, the first of three parts, he talks about his introduction to computing and some things to remember about the history of software before the PC.
I mean, I've been at Sun for a frighteningly long time, almost 22 years. I've been collecting a paycheck as a software engineer for 36 years. I'm not that old. I actually started at 14.
How'd you start at 14? What happened?
Well, it was sort of a weird deal. My parents lived relatively close to the University of Calgary, and Dad had a friend whose son was like a student there, and he took us like on a tour. And we walked through the computer center, and this is like when I was like 12 or 13 or something, and I just thought it was just like the coolest thing ever. And so after that little walking tour, I started like just going over as just barely a teenager, and just like wandering the halls and looking at things. And I was pretty big, even though I was much younger than pretty much everybody there. The way universities work, they kind of presume that if you're like hanging around, you're probably supposed to be there. And the computer center, they had all these security systems, but they were all these, locked doors with keypad locks. And, if you're moderately sharp-eyed, you can watch somebody punch the thing, and then, you know the combination and you're in. And I just started reading, and, they had machines sitting around, and I just started using them.
And what happened when you started using them? Did you get interested in actually...
I got really interested in using it. I mean, at that time, there was no such thing as computers at home. No such thing.
But, and reading at home or, that sort of thing. Or
did even finding books to read. I mean, if you went to, a public library, you would not find anything useful. All of the interesting books were at the university, so I had to read them in the university library. I didn't have a library card, right? So I couldn't take anything home. So I had to do it there. And, they had, the big batch computers. I would steal students' accounts and do that kind of stuff. But they also had, smaller machines. Things that people were doing, science stuff with that didn't really have accounting or anything. And I would just get to know when nobody was using them, and I would kind of sneak in and just use them.
Well, it's kind of innocent hacking.
It was fairly innocent hacking, right? And at some point, I got to know some people that worked for the physics department. And, I had taught myself enough that I could do actually fairly interesting things, and these, moderately crazy people in the physics department decided to give me a job. So I'm 14 and writing software for the ISS 2 satellite, and just having the time of my life. And high school was sort of weird then, because I skipped an immense number of classes, and my teachers were all okay with it. Because they all kind of figured out where I was going and what I was doing. And, this was, the late 60s, early 70s. And
as long as you're learning something,
right?
So
I had all these classmates that were skipping school, and they were, out there doing crack and speed, right? And I was, going down the block to the university and...
Doing your own form of crack and speed.
Doing my own form. Doing the geek form of crack and speed, right? Which was, software for a satellite. which was, you know, just an unspeakable amount of fun. And I mean, I worked at the university all through high school, and I actually worked at the university all through, you know, doing an undergrad. I mean, I actually managed to graduate, you know, with my bachelor's from the University of Calgary with, you know, real money in the bank, right? Most people have loans, right? I actually put myself through college and had enough to then sort of get myself into grad school.
So in an instant, you knew what you wanted to do when you were 14 years old, and
it was absolutely instantaneous. And one of the things that's hard these days is I've got a daughter who's just graduating high school, and she's going through the, you know, which university should I go to? And, you know, she doesn't want to know what she wants to do with her life. She's sort of trying to, you know, and she gets like really good SAT scores in everything, but nothing has really like grabbed her other than like cross country running. And, you know, at some really fundamental level, I'm, you know, unable to really be sympathetic because I don't really understand the quandary, right? I mean, I sort of got sucked into something really early on, and I've been stuck there, and happily stuck there, right? I mean, I actually still get a great kick out of it. And so trying to sort of counsel her and help her, right? I have zero relevant experience.
If you could paint a picture of how these changes have come in fundamental ways, how would you describe the history of software in a nutshell? Maybe that's not possible to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those, you know, Blaise Pascal things. You know, he wrote this footnote in this one letter that, you know, I'm sorry I couldn't make this letter any shorter. I didn't have enough time, right? Because I don't know how to say any of it quickly. I mean, there's been this ramp that has gone through, you know, fits and starts, and, you know, it's had, you know, 20 years of being pretty explosive. But it's a technology that kind of fits into everything, and it's amazing to see how things kind of get reincarnated.
Could you see that then? I mean, even in the 70s, could you see that this could be applied to everything back in the 70s?
Oh, yeah. And you know, one of the great inspirations for me has always been, like, reading science fiction, right? And, you know, people had been writing lots of, you know, science fiction stories about, you know, intelligent robots, intelligent tanks, intelligent, you know, everything, right? You know, what if, you know, your teacup was intelligent? And that, you know, for me, kind of turns into this kind of, gee, you know, all these guys are just like spouting stuff, but, you know, you could actually do that. Right? I mean, I remember when I was like, I don't know, I was like 8 or 9 or something, and I watched, like, what was it, when the Earth Stood Still,
The day the Earth stood still,
right? And you know, Klaatu, the robot, right? I thought he was just like the coolest thing ever, right? You know, and I had some, you know, other geek kitty friends, you know, and we were like trying to build like a Klaatu, right? And it's like, well, we can build like the skin on the outside, and it's like, but how do you make him think? And I actually got like really depressed, right? Because all of us I had this bunch of kid friends, right? And we were all like getting apple juice cans and snipping them out and making, you know, shapes for body parts and then it's like, but this is just little tin can bits, you know? What would it take to actually make them work? And you know, the surprising thing is that we've kind of been on that ramp. And, you know, watching how various things have sort of rippled back and forth, you know, it's at some level it all started with scientific computing, and these days, when you look at scientific computing, it's kind of a distant backwater for, you know, I mean, there's like almost no commercial activity there, and, you know, it annoys the hell out of me, but that's kind of the way it is. You know, I got started doing a lot of stuff in devices, and for the longest time, people didn't really worry about devices very much. I mean, there was this real split in the computer industry, you know, where the computer industry had become very focused on, you know, data centers, and then there was like desktop computers, but they were still computers, and this was kind of one of the things that really led to the whole Java thing was, you know, a bunch of us kind of went off and we sort of did a survey of like other industries, and there's all kinds of people putting digital systems into other things, but they had sort of skipped or ignored like the whole, you know, several decades of learning in the computer business. And they were kind of...
And why is that? What were they doing? Were they reinventing the wheel or starting too much from scratch in each individual project?
Well, things like people doing, you know, building automation or, you know, factory automation or whatever. And they'd often be, you know, building networking into their, you know, they would have had like, you know, a controller for a milling machine, and then they decide, well, they want to be able to do a factory floor, so they go off and they like invent their own network, right? And you know you look at the specs for this network that they're in the process of inventing, and you know, I go, that was a bad idea 20 years ago. I can give you like the 37 reasons why this is going to fail because people have done this before, right? And yet, you know, people in the kind of device world, they had a different set of issues. You know, they worried about things like reliability and, you know, working within a physical context. You know, the computer industry had really become this sort of very isolated ivory tower kind of thing. And, you know, Sun was kind of a weird place when Sun got founded because we really believed in this whole network thing. And I mean, I deeply believe that, you know, that the network is a really important thing. And you know, when we got started, this was considered a, you know, kind of a spooky, stupid thing to do. But we persevered. And now, right, there's the whole, you know, the whole internet and the web and all of this kind of stuff. And I sort of look at it and it, you know, part of it feels kind of retro. It's sort of like, wow, you know, this stuff. You know,
we're still actually doing that.
Yeah, you know, we're still doing that. You know, it's, you know, people going up and down, like, this is really new, this is really new. And it's like, well, it's not actually new. I mean, a lot of this stuff, you know, the basic ideas are old. I mean, one of the great sources these days of ideas is to read like old PhD theses, right? I mean, you know, if you go back 20 and 30 years, you know, people wrote these great PhD theses with these great ideas, but the machines that we had at the time, it was just impossible to make any of it actually work. You know, you could kind of make little prototypes out of work so you could, you know, prove that enough of the idea worked. You know, but now, you know, it's been, you know, a bunch of years of Moore's Law cranking away. And, you know, kaboom. You know, a lot of these things actually work. I mean, one of the really funny areas to look at is the whole computer graphics area. You know, I go to SIGGRAPH every year. SIGGRAPH is the special interest groups in computer graphics. It's where all the nerdy bits of the folks who do computer graphics, which these days is sort of split into the movie guys and the video game guys, but it's really amazing the proportion of the papers in that conference that are really just like rehashing 19th century physics. It's sort of like people went, you know, fishing in 19th century physics books, looking for old ideas, and going, oh, we can actually use this now.